All right, Grizzlies, I'm excited to pick up a passenger during this Rock Road Home with Heather, and I'm joined on the phone with the drummer of the band from Grey Days, Mr. Sean Dowdell. Thanks for joining me, Sean.
Thanks for having me on today. I appreciate it.
No problem. Now, first of all, before we get into the, you know, the new album and everything and working with Chester, how are you doing during the pandemic?
I'm doing okay. I've been keeping very busy. I'm also an entrepreneur. I have several companies, so I literally took the time where everyone, where a lot of people were not working, and worked harder than I have in a long, long time. Was putting in, you know, a lot of remodels,
oh, yeah,
a lot of restructuring, and just reinvestment back into our company, so that when they were able to reopen, we came back stronger, and our employees felt like they had an advocate, you know, that was on their side.
Well, that's awesome. That's really important, because one of the things right now with all this, everybody's concerned about everybody keeping their mental health in check. Not only physical health, but mental health is something that we really need to focus on as well, because people get really,
absolutely,
you know, they get in these little boxes and stuff. And I think personally, music is the way that's helping me cope with the whole situation.
Yeah, I mean, me too. So, I mean, you know, people are very fragile,
mm-hmm,
and it takes somebody, hopefully, that, you know, in their life to kind of give them a guiding light, so to speak, give them some positivity, something good to focus on, rather than the news and all the negativity,
mm-hmm,
that's being passed around, like, you know, crack right now. It just,
right,
doesn't feel good to do that all day. So
your band Grey Days actually formed decades ago, and some people really don't know too much about it, but they know the lead singer of the band, obviously, Chester Bennington. Can you tell us a little bit the history of the band?
So I'll give you the Cliff Notes version.
Okay.
1992, we were auditioning for a singer for our first band together, and
mm-hmm,
our friend Chris Hewlett said that he knew a kid that sounded just like Eddie Vedder. I was 17 at the time.
Okay.
A couple days later, this kid walks into the rehearsal studio. He's 15 years old, weighs about 100 pounds, has tight curly hair, these,
oh,
little,
yeah,
wire-rimmed glasses, and kind of looked like a nerd. And I remember thinking to myself, this guy is not lead singer material. And then he got up to the microphone and blew us away.
Oh, yeah.
He was awesome. And he sang Alive from Pearl Jam. And from halfway through the song, we're basically asking him, when can you start? And he had to go ask his dad for permission.
That's awesome.
So I literally drove to his father, him and his father's house, with him, and sat in the living room and negotiated with his dad. And basically told him I thought his son had a lot of talent. And his dad said, okay, give it a try. And from that moment, we were kind of attached at the hip. And we played together in Grey Days for the next 6 years. We put out two full lengths and,
mm-hmm,
a demo. We signed three different record deals. We had gotten a lot of regional love and radio play. We were, you know, towards the last 2-3 years of the band, we were selling out venues left and right, playing,
mm-hmm,
in front of large crowds, and playing with all the nationals that would roll through town. And then basically in 1998, the band signed a small deal with Warner Brothers, a little 4-song production deal. And I think just the years of the hard work and you know, disappointments in the other deals that we had signed took its toll on the band. And we just got in a huge fight on a little tune-up show the week before we were supposed to record for Warner. And we imploded. We got,
wow,
you know, basically couldn't recover from it. And everyone went their own separate ways. But luckily, our attorney, Scott Harrington, had the wherewithal and foresight he knew that Chester had a serious talent and didn't want him to kind of fall into the abyss of the Phoenix music scene,
right,
and go nowhere. So he had another band that he was working with out in L.A. that was called Zero. And he asked Chester to record a quick demo, and he did. And then a couple days later, I think he drove out to L.A. and he joined that band, and that band became Linkin Park. So Chester and I basically had lost touch for about 1.5-2 years after Grey Days broke up. We had a really bad falling out.
Mm-hmm.
And then we reconciled when we found our guitar player had been diagnosed with terminal brain cancer.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, we are best of friends. So when we got back on the phone, we both apologized, and then we became best of friends again. And literally a year later, you know, we were in business together. We own a company called Club Tattoo together. And we had always toyed with putting Grey Days back together. We tried once, I think, in 2003, and then again in 2007.
I was going to say, what was your reaction when he said, hey, let's get the band back together?
So we were on one of our normal phone calls. We talked quite a bit, because we were great friends, but we're also business partners too. And he called me on one of these calls, and we were discussing throwing another big party for our company, Club Tattoo. We used to do these really big anniversary parties. I'm talking 4,000 or 5,000 people would show up to these,
wow,
things. And Chester and I would get up on stage and play. And we had a blast, but we hadn't done one in a couple of years. So we started discussing doing another one. And he said, you know, I've been thinking about that. Let's put Grey Days back. I want to put Grey Days back together for that party. And I said, really? And that was just, the timing just was perfect. The timing just never worked out. Either he was on the road and had too many commitments to,
mm-hmm,
record, or I was opening up a new business, and we just, the timing never worked. And this time it just seemed to align. And so we set a date in mid-2017, and I was on board. We kind of discussed the logistics. I was just surprised that he wanted to put the band back together, to be honest, because we had talked about it several times. We had played in some side projects. So we always loved playing together and writing together. So that was not a surprise to hear it. The timing, I think, was more of a surprise for me. Like, wow. Right. But, you know, in retrospect, it was about a year after he left Stone Temple Pilots. And I know that really bothered him when he left the band.
Right.
He told me on the phone, he said, look, I miss having a rock band of my own. I miss playing with you. And that's really what I think the motivation was for him. And then we started talking about, well, we have this catalog of music. We have like 30 plus songs. We could go back and retrack these things because there's some really good songs. So we discussed what that would look like. He's like, well, my schedule's really tight. How are we going to do this? And I was like, well, I'll go in the studio and work with the producers while you're on the road. We'll rewrite the stuff, go back and forth via email, get your thoughts, get your input, and we'll track everything. And then we'll either send a producer out on the road with you to get your vocal takes, or once you get off the road, we'll get in the studio and put down some new songs and get your vocals. So that was really the plan. And then, of course, you know, in July 2017, he passed away. So everything just stopped.
I can't even imagine what that moment would be for you. I remember I was going to a live remote, and I'll never forget it. The announcement came over as I was driving to my parents. I remember a tiny little boy, he was about 6 years old, came up to me, the remote, hugged me. He was so heartbroken when I did the announcement. It was like I was being consoled by a child who understood the magnitude.
So for me, I was in serious shock. It took me a few weeks, I think, to digest that he was actually gone. And then a few, you know, months after that, of course, of grieving. I didn't lose a singer. I lost one of my best friends in the world. And so that, to me, it has a whole different, I understand the magnitude of what he meant to people who never even met him. I just didn't understand because I had spoken to him literally 2 days beforehand. We were supposed to start rehearsals that Sunday. I think he passed away on a Thursday.
Yeah.
He was going to fly back from LA to Phoenix. We're supposed to have dinner Saturday night, start rehearsal Sunday. So I didn't see it coming at all. It was a mind blow for me. I just didn't understand why.
So the first time you heard his vocals that he laid down when you were putting this album together, what went through your mind? Was it a sadness? Was it an appreciation? What was that moment like?
So the first few months, well, what we decided to do after we decided to pick up the project again, I know it was important to him. It was something we discussed. We were so excited to work together again. Warner Brothers erased what Grey Days was once Linkin Park hit the charts. And I understand it from their point of view, it's business, but it didn't feel good on the receiving side. And he didn't like it either. So I understood how important it was for him to get this music out. So when we decided to approach this, we literally took all of the old music and took it away and literally stripped it down to just his vocals. And then we sat and listened to his vocals and worked on the arrangement and made sure his vocals were the best they possibly could be. And then we rewrote every single song around his vocals to make the music more modern and something a little bit more relevant in today's music arena, you know? And the first couple months, just listening to those vocal tracks, it was heartbreaking. It was sad. We shared lots of tears together. But I have to tell you, I also started to understand him. Even though he and I wrote these lyrics 20 years ago, I started to understand him on a much deeper level of the pain and emotional torment this guy was going through his entire life.
So it was like a prophetic moment. And I mean, for you, it was a little bit therapeutic because you're getting to kind of understand what happened with your friend.
It did become therapeutic, you know, 6-8 months into the process for sure. I think, honestly, doing this entire record really was my whole grieving process. It was my healing process.
I can imagine.
I listened to these lyrics after he was gone, and they took on such a deeper meaning and gave me such a more broad understanding of where he was coming from. You know, the underlying tragedy of all this is Chester never felt good enough for anybody, which is mind-blowing because he was such an amazing human being.
Mm-hmm.
He was such an amazing singer, but he never felt good enough about himself. And that really is the tragedy that people need to understand.
Right.
No matter what you think people have, it doesn't matter if they don't feel that way about themselves.
What do you think it should be the takeaway that Chester fans have from this album?
You know, I would love to celebrate Chester's life every day. So if they take it that way, I'm fine with that. I kind of looked at it a little differently. As I wanted to maybe give people a little bit of closure or a little bit of a reconnection emotionally to somebody that they've loved for so many years.
Well, I want to thank you very much for joining me today. It's been a pleasure talking to you and just reminiscing about what a great artist Chester was. And then, of course, obviously him being one of your closest friends. Hopefully you find some therapy and some love in this new album. So definitely check it out on Friday, June 26th. It's going to be released. It's called Amends. Do you guys have any social media for Gray Days you want them to follow on?
Instagram is Gray Days Official and Facebook is Real Gray Days. So thank you for having me on, and I truly hope you enjoy the music.